The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, will God really take care of his people during times of persecution? Well, my friend, two answers. First, the good news. Yes, he will. Now, the not so good news. The Bible does not say that this is the way God prefers things to be done. He prefers that we live in a free and peaceful life. Unfortunately, we are speeding down the road, about to take the exit sign from the freeway, free being the operative word. We are on the road to such persecution right here in America, which is supposed to be the land of the free. A nation designed to be a republic with a guaranteed Bill of Rights, including not only religious freedom, but freedom of speech for all citizens. And yet, in the name of goodness, evil is spreading, and it's spreading by changing the name tags. Many years ago, Isaiah the prophet once wrote, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." That is the problem today. What is good is being called evil. What is evil is being called good. And what better way to find examples of such switched labels than to look at our beloved politicians. Nancy Pelosi says that the White House's refusal to honor subpoenas unless Congress first makes its impeachment inquiry official is further evidence of obstruction. That seems to be the favorite Democrat catchphrase these days, obstruction of justice. How about this for obstruction of justice? Calling for an impeachment inquiry without a formal vote on the floor of the House, the result of which being that Trump's staff do not have the right to legal representation, and Republicans in the House do not have the right to cross-examine witnesses or bring in their own witnesses. I am so tired of these pathological, lying hypocrites screaming about obstruction of justice. They have been after Trump so long with rotating fill-in-the-blank causes for impeachment, they wouldn't recognize justice if it rang their doorbell and shouted trick-or-treat. Anyway, that's the latest from the former Speaker of the House, formal and former, I should say, because the informal, real Speaker of the House and celebrity of millennials, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, continues to make news. Now, probably the woman means well. There's just one problem. From time to time, she speaks. Here are a couple of recent gems. She accuses President Trump of anti-Semitism. Trump, now putting aside the fact that he has a Jewish son-in-law whom he has given responsibility to in his administration, Trump has been a greater friend to Israel than any president in the last 50 years. And notice that she doesn't call out fellow squad members like Omar or Tlaib for their open, vile hatred of Israel, support of BDS, which does not recognize Israel's right to exist, and other anti-Semitic actions, such as Omar's comment about the Benjamins or Tlaib's association with the shameless Jew hater Louis Farrakhan. And wait till you get a load of this one. Cortez thinks prisons should be outlawed. Prisons! Just shut them all down. Let them all out. Now relax. Don't fret. She has no intention of leaving us high and dry. She says we'll have some kind of reform program instead. For a moment there, I was concerned. Speaking of the need to outlaw things, Cortez is lucky we don't outlaw stupidity. On the other hand, New York City has already outlawed something of their own. In New York City, the term illegal alien is no longer allowed. Not if it's used with, as they call it, in their words, intent to demean, humiliate, or harass a person. This law was put into action by the city's Commission on Human Rights. Residents of the city could be slapped with a fine of up to $250,000 for failure to comply. Related prohibitions encompass a list of actions that immigrants might find offensive. This includes calling the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE for short, if such a call is, to put it in their words again, motivated by discrimination, derogatory use of the term illegal alien, and discrimination based on limited English proficiency. Now, the authority of NYC Commission on Human Rights to make such rulings is found in Title 8 of the Administrative Code of New York City. And so, depending on context and motive, illegal alien is one hair from being an illegal phrase in New York City. There are two ironies here. First, usage of the term alien rather than immigrant is still a valid legal term in our legal code. The term is defined in our code as any person not a citizen or national of the United States. And also, our Supreme Court, while ruling on many cases concerning federal immigration law, uses the term illegal alien. Another irony is that an alternative title, undocumented worker, has not been banned by New York City, but undocumented worker is defined exactly the same way. You know what undocumented worker means? It means illegal immigrant or illegal alien. People are reacting to sounds and emotion rather than true meaning. But there should be a broader concern here for speech in general. The censoring of specific words is nothing new for New York. Previous bans from New York City have included the usage of gender pronouns from employers or landlords toward employees and tenants. Such violations also earned a $250,000 fine, provided the terms were found to be willful, wanton, or malicious. Now, exactly how is motive being determined for any of these verbal expressions? Nobody can read minds. Nobody can objectively answer such a question. New York City is not alone in its gender concerns. In many parts of our country, public school teachers and other government employees are forbidden to use gender pronouns. However, New York City has taken this up a notch. While it can be argued that one makes certain concessions when agreeing to take a job, the situation in New York City's rulings regarding gender language and immigrant language are not limited to government employees. They apply to all city residents. In addition to the protection of our other rights, the Constitution's First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. The Constitution also has a supremacy clause which says state laws cannot interfere with federal law. Of course, this also applies to what a state allows its cities to do. For this reason, New York City's bans are in clear violation of United States law. Perhaps such clarity is being clouded by an atmosphere of political correctness on steroids. Pandora's box has been opened. Where will this stop? What will be next? Will we go the way of Europe? In Ireland, they've already had for a long time, several decades, the Prohibition of Incitement to Hatred Act. This, reading from their words again, incitement to hatred on account of race, religion, nationality, or sexual orientation is forbidden. The law includes public speaking, broadcasts, and written materials. One would think that a hateful motive would be in the eye of the beholder, but not in Ireland. Violation of this law includes insulting, and that actual word is used in the language of the law. Similar laws exist in England, Norway, Canada, and Sweden. Make no mistake. Many Americans would like to see similar laws in the United States. According to the Cato Institute, 51% of Democrats, favor a law that would force people to honor a transgender person's pronoun choice. Whatever one's view of transgender, same-sex lifestyle, or any other sexual practice, such a change in our public understanding of freedom should send chills up our spines. It gets even broader. YouGov did a poll in which 51% of Democrats were in favor of banning hate speech in general. Obviously, nobody should be in favor of hate, provided it's real hate or misdirected hate. Obviously, it's okay to hate something evil. But how exactly do we legislate an emotion? It can only be done by eroding the First Amendment. Such erosion is completely subjective. Anything can be defined as hate speech today, from religious and conservative values to the desire to protect our borders. When our forefathers framed the First Amendment, they were specifically protecting offensive speech. They knew that benign speech did not need any safeguards. Nobody needs protection for following the pack or repeating universally popular talking points. America was set up as a country of independence. This includes independent thought and independent speech. This message seems lost on so many of today's politicians who were put in office for the purpose of protecting our republic. Their followers are growing. Conversely, our Constitution is shrinking, and people like Beto O'Rourke want to shrink it even more. Have you heard the latest? Beto, who is way behind in the polls and has zero chance of getting the Democratic nomination, is trying to bring attention to himself with a heaping helping of political correctness. He says that if he becomes president, he will work to eliminate the tax-exempt status of any church that is unwilling to perform same-sex weddings. Now, Beto, as a candidate, is not to be taken seriously, but watch for the mainstream media to start asking the other candidates about this. This does seem to be the only thing they care about regarding Christianity these days. We've seen it in past interviews. The owner of Chick-fil-A agrees to an interview about his Christian business. The press basically wants his opinion of same-sex marriage. And then history gets rewritten, as if Chick-fil-A has some kind of discriminatory policy about hiring gays or serving gays. They do not. The owner merely articulated a belief he didn't bring up, a belief he was asked about, a belief he is entitled to. This happens in interview after interview. I'm telling you, folks, they could be interviewing Sister Batrill about a Catholic orphanage run by nuns where thousands of children are being cared for, and the only question of interest to the press will be same-sex marriage. And so, this will not go away. It may not happen after the next election, but it's interesting that Beto could say this out loud, knowing he would be cheered by an audience.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development, that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Back to 96.1 FM, 1170 AM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I was talking about Beto O'Rourke saying that if he becomes president, which isn't going to happen, but watch for others to start saying this, he wants to remove the tax exemption for any church that will not perform a same-sex union. I warned you years ago this would happen. Not just me, but I warned it vehemently right on this radio show. Back when Proposition 8 was being passed in California, those who opposed the proposition argued separation between church and state. This is none of the church's business. How does it hurt the church, they asked. Christians can still believe and practice marriage any way they want. People like me, and you can listen to my old shows, you can read my old articles, people like me warned it would not be enough for militant activists because nothing is ever enough for a militant activist. The phrase separation between church and state was merely being used for convenience sake. When we see churches threatened and told what they better be willing to do and what beliefs they better be willing to change, we don't see that separation working both ways, do we? And it's not like Christians aren't already being harassed. I mentioned Chick-fil-A a moment ago. Need I remind you they were told by the mayor of Boston that their business was unwelcome in that city? Don't forget Masterpiece Cake Shop. The Supreme Court has temporarily blocked that Colorado legislation, which fined him, but it's only temporary. It will rear its ugly head again. And again, we see more historical revision. This guy did not have a sign on his shop saying he wouldn't sell wedding cakes to gay people, but that was how he was portrayed. He was unwilling to decorate a cake, which made statements he didn't believe. Now, I'm speaking to those of you who may not agree with my moral stance, those of you who aren't religious, those of you who have no problem with same-sex marriage, still, ask yourself these questions. First, if the situation was reversed and someone went into a cake shop run by an openly gay person and said, for my wedding, I want you to decorate my cake by referring to Genesis, and I want writing with explicit icing saying that God only approves of marriages between men and women. Now, I know you don't agree. I know you're gay, but you will write that statement on the cake or I will sue you for discrimination. You like the way that sounds? Probably not. What if a Klansman asked for a cake which said that white people were superior to black people? And it's not just a question of religious or moral conviction. Cake decoration is an art form. Let me speak to you artists out there. Movies and novels are also an art form. Should the day come when Hollywood producers are told that they have to have at least one gay character in each film? Will novelists be told the same? And getting back to the church, what will be next? Will churches be instructed to distribute abortion pills to their staff or provide health insurance that covers abortion? Christian colleges have already been given that mandate. Hillary Clinton, back when she thought she would be our next president, said Christians needed to be prepared to change their beliefs. Christians need to be prepared to change their beliefs. Ladies and gentlemen, let me say it again. The so-called tolerance is not working both ways. Maybe things will get better. Maybe, depending on prayer, depending on revival, depending on who wins the next election, the erosion of religious and artistic freedom will stop. But here's something you can be sure of. Unless we see those exact changes happen, we are on a road to persecution. And so for the next couple of segments of our program, I'm going to discuss the warnings that Jesus gave us about persecution. In Matthew chapter 10, verses 16 through 28, Jesus was sending out his disciples. He said, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. Be on your guard against men. They will hand you over to the local councils and flog you in their synagogues. On my account, you will be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. But when they arrest you, do not worry about what to say or how to say it. At that time, you will be given what to say, for it will not be you speaking, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. You will be hated by everyone because of me, but the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. When you are persecuted in one place, flee to another. Truly, I tell you, you will not finish going through the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. The student is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for students to be like their teachers and servants like their masters. If the head of the house had been called Beelzebub, how much more the members of his household? So do not be afraid of them. There is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed or hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roofs. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Now, he mentions here the Gentiles, which is interesting because at this time, although there were certainly some Gentiles in Israel, the message about the Messiah was understood by the Jews and preached to the Jews. Matthew, however, did not necessarily write everything in chronological order, and he did something that was very common to the Hebrew culture. We call it telescoping. He was looking ahead, and sometimes a prophet like Jesus would talk about an immediate event and then go into the farther future. In the farther future, after Israel was completely destroyed by the Romans in the second century, a lot of Christians came under the persecution of Romans. At first, the Romans just saw Jewish Christians and Jews who were not Christians as they just saw that as a religious dispute amongst Jews. They really didn't care about that. But once Christians were no longer under the umbrella of Israel and Judaism, it was very different. The Romans started seeing them as a threat. So Jesus is saying in this immediate mission, you're going to get persecuted by some of your fellow Jews. In the far future, you're going to get persecuted by the Gentiles, specifically the Roman government. And so he's saying they're going to be handed over to the Gentiles. He's also predicting a general persecution that goes even farther than when the Romans first started persecuting them, going right into the end of the world. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burn down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS Electric.
Listen to this customer review of Bob Siegel's novel, Choice of the Lorelei. I saw this play on which the story is based many years ago. Elements of it have stayed with me over the years as it expanded my imagination about how things might have been in ancient times. It was also very exciting to see this story intersecting with the other works by the author, Very different stories, yet linked by a common element. I can hardly wait for more. Choice of the Lorelei, available in ebook or print copies from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Jesus predicted three different kinds of trials that his people would someday go through. First, from the state, they would be brought before councils, kings, governors. Not that the state hadn't persecuted other people. The Greek philosophers used to have to wrestle with this. Aristotle used to wonder if a good man could also be a good citizen, since being a good citizen means always obeying the state. And there would be times when the state would ask you to do things that violate your conscience. And then he said that his people would be persecuted by their own people. Now, again, in the time of Christ, those following Christ were not calling themselves Christians. They were Jews. He was the Messiah. They were calling themselves followers of the Messiah, which is what Christ means, which is what Christian means. The gathering in those days was called the synagogue. Actually, the Greek word for church also means gathering, so it's very much a similar word. Originally, they were under persecution from fellow Jews. But I want you to know that throughout church history, Christians, most of the time, now there's been all kinds of people persecuting Christians, like communists and Muslims in Muslim countries today. Christians are being murdered all over the place. But throughout the last 2,000 years of history, most of the persecution toward true Christians happened from people in the church who were false Christians using the name Christian. The Catholic Church murdered a lot of people that they called heretics. When the Protestant Church came into power, they did the same kind of thing. And we've seen this even here in America, where obviously we're not going through that kind of persecution. Christians aren't being murdered in America. But there are times, and I can think of many times in my ministry, when I was trying to do evangelism and reach out to unbelievers, and I was obstructed by Christians. I used to go out to college campuses and do what was called open-air evangelism. There, I would do events too. We'd rent out lecture halls, and I participated in debates, and I did lectures. I did one-man drama presentations, and people invited their friends. But we were also aware that some people, no matter what you invited them to, just weren't going to come. So I would go outdoors to the free speech area of a campus. Every campus is still supposed to have a free speech area. Somebody ought to explain that to Berkeley, one of the first campuses to have free speech, and one of the ones that suppressed free speech the most. But I would go out there, and it wasn't a preaching time. It was just a time for people to fire their questions at me. But occasionally, different kinds of Bible theologies would come up. Somebody asked me one time if women were allowed to be pastors. I said, yes, I believe they are. Oh, my goodness, there was another guy in the group who didn't believe women could be pastors. He was a Christian. He started arguing with me, and I tried to say, brother, look, if you have a different opinion on that, that's fine, but right now I'm out here to talk to people who don't even believe in the Bible at all. Let's not get into this in-house discussion right here. I met a Christian one time who was very bothered that I didn't teach predestination, Calvinism, the belief that God chooses ahead of time who's going to be saved. There were people who were more charismatic. They were concerned that I wasn't talking enough about tongues. Sometimes I've gone to these campuses, as I've said, to do debates. And, oh, it's really interesting, the reaction in a debate. Obviously, if a Christian group calls you out to do a debate, they want you to win. They want you to show that Christianity has evidence. Sometimes some professor or somebody from the local humanist or atheist society would come and give a case for atheism. And I would show them, and we do this a lot on this program, how there are actually facts associated with believing in God, with the historicity of the Bible. So debates would hold great interest. The lecture halls would be crowded. But I went, this was at OSU a number of years ago, and we were getting ready to do the debate, and one of the people sponsoring it came up to me and he said, oh, I just wanted to give you a heads up. We're not actually calling this a debate. We're just calling it a forum. Now, you've heard that saying, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. I said, that's interesting. We're not calling this a debate. I said, I'm looking here at the schedule. I'm looking here at the outline. It says opening statement, closing statement, rebuttal, second rebuttal, cross-examination. I said, it looks like a debate to me. He goes, oh, well, yeah. I mean, honestly, it is. But some of these kids, they grew up in homes where to them, the word debate means argue. And when they think of arguing, they think of their parents getting into these arguments. I said, well, this would be a good idea then to show them that an argument can be done civilly and an argument can be done with kindness. Anyway, I was debating a professor who he had done a debate not long ago. He had been rude. He'd interrupted. We were wondering how this was going to go. Well, as it happened, from the moment I got up there, he was kind of caught off guard. I kind of took control. It was very clear to everybody that I had won the debate. And one of the students from the sponsoring group that brought me out there asked if he could take me out to breakfast the next morning. And I thought he just had some more questions about the debate. He was excited about how it went. I was very surprised. We're having breakfast. He says, you know, last night up on the debate stage, you were kind of confrontational up there. I said, yeah, it was a debate. My whole purpose in being there was to confront what this man believed. There are times when I want to grab some of these people and say, I can't fight a two-front war. If I had come out here and lost the debate, you'd have been very unhappy. Now I win the debate and it's, well, I don't think arguing is in the love of Christ. Christ argued all the time. Read his dialogues with the Pharisees. Read Paul's dialogues with the Pharisees. Read Apollos' dialogues with the Pharisees. Read Stephen, the very first Christian martyr, unless you count Jesus himself. He got into a debate with the Sanhedrin. He did such a good job, they didn't know what to say. So you know what they did? They took out stones and they stoned him to death. In those days, they didn't hand out comment cards or response cards in a debate. The way you knew back then is they'd stone you to death if you did a good job. But what's interesting is it's said there that the Holy Spirit filled him with wisdom. He's having an argument and he's filled with the Holy Spirit. Isn't that interesting? As you know, I'm a Christian apologist. I'm somebody who shows that there are reasons, credible reasons to accept the Bible. It's not all about blind faith. It's not about blind faith at all. That's not even the definition of faith in the Bible. And I do this. Occasionally people say to me, well, you know, we can't argue people into the kingdom. I have never met a Christian apologist who believes we can argue people into the kingdom. I don't believe we can argue people into the kingdom. We Christian apologists, we are all very aware that unless the Holy Spirit does something in somebody's heart, they are not going to get saved. But my point here is Jesus is saying that if we're following him, we're going to get resistance from those who don't call themselves people of God and from those who do call themselves people of God. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others do not.
You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church.
Bob Siegel Show. We're going to switch gears now. There's a lot more to say about persecution, a lot more to say about Jesus' warnings of persecution. We will do them in a future show, but we're going to lighten things up and switch gears. I'm here with my lovely wife and occasional co-host, Dana Siegel. Go ahead, Dana.
Yes, we have spent some time at Disneyland lately, and we've done a few specials on Disneyland. But what's really interesting is that most recently, just kind of a what they were touting as an historic opening of the Star Wars land, we really were expecting something different. And we have been surprised after not having passes for almost 2 years. We went back for the first time in April this year, and we were stunned at how empty Disneyland was. We had just, we'd never seen it in the almost 10 years we've had passes.
Because we literally walked on every ride.
We did.
There wasn't even a line. I mean, we just walked on.
Yes, we did. And we thought in April that that was because Star Wars Land was coming in May. And everybody was waiting for that opening. So we thought, oh boy, it's going to be packed after that. So we then kept hearing that it wasn't packed. And so we went again in June, and we just went for a couple of days. And we go on weekdays. That is the benefit that we have. So we went on a couple of weekdays in June. It still was very empty, and this is summertime, and we've typically avoided summertime at Disneyland because it's crazy busy. It was not busy again, and we couldn't figure it out. And so we started doing some research, and there were several things. There were a lot of online things, but one of the things that I found was an article written by Brady McDonald. He wrote this in July. And it's seven reasons why Disneyland feels less crowded. And we found it very interesting. And we kept experiencing that same phenomenon.
Well, so, because when we went back, the last time we were there, each day we thought, well, wasn't last time close to Labor Day weekend?
Yes, it was right after Labor Day.
So we said,
yes,
well, tomorrow it'll be more crowded. Every single day was just as empty. I'm telling you, both parks, California Adventure and the Disneyland proper.
And that one was so empty in September. Now, we kind of timed that one because, again, that's when every school district is back in session. Colleges are all in session. So we chose that specifically.
We've been there that time of the year before, and it's still been crowded.
Yeah. So this was different. We were walking on and off rides. One of the things that was kind of funny is that you could tell who pass holders were and who the, you know, first-time visitors were, because first-time visitors see, like, standby line, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15. They go jump in the line, and we would look at the return time, and the return time for Fast Pass was right now. So we would bypass the standby line where, you know, it's still short, 5, 10, 15 minutes. We'd take our cards, go over, get a Fast Pass that was activated right in that moment when it came out of the machine.
Usually a Fast Pass, you have to come back like 3 hours later.
Yeah, or 10. I mean, sometimes it's crazy waits. And so we'd get the Fast Pass and walk right up to the line and walk right past all of the standby people and go right on. And then as soon as you do that, your pass is good again. So we could just keep Fast Passing all over the park. And it was pretty interesting. We also got another benefit. We've only, in all the years we've been going to Disneyland, we'd only eaten at the Blue Bayou one other time. And we walked on Blue Bayou by just walking up and saying, they said, oh, well, as soon as we switch from lunch to dinner menu, we can do that. So we walked into Blue Bayou, which is normally a several day ahead reservation time. So as we were seeing all this, we really did start to wonder. And so this article is pretty fascinating. Brady gives 10 or 7 reasons why Disneyland appears to be less full right now. One of them, the main one, is that Disneyland blocked many of the annual pass holders for almost all of summer, if not through summer and into September. That is unusual because we used to get the Southern California.
Well, that was in anticipation of wanting to bring in all these one-day ticket holders for their big
Star Wars
world.
Yes, yes. And
Galaxy's Edge.
Exactly. Well, that didn't happen, but here they had their whole pass, their annual pass holder base not being allowed into the park.
Well, there were two things they weren't counting on. First of all, not everybody who's a Disneyland fan is a Star Wars fan. But even amongst the Star Wars fans, it's been a mixed review. Some people absolutely love it. I thought it was okay. I thought it was unique. I think you felt that way too, Dan.
that it was okay. But after 3 years, they only had one ride. And the big prima donna ride that they've been advertising the most that's supposed to be so unique, that's not even the one ride that they have yet. So I just think it was such a hype, and it just didn't match up to the hype.
It was big hype, and we were looking forward to it because we are Star Wars fans.
And again, it was okay. If you're a Star Wars fan, you'll probably like it. I'm not saying you won't, but it did not get the kind of response that Disneyland was expecting.
Well, and I think a part of it is you hit it on the head one time when we were there. You said, you know, if I was to pick a land out of the Star Wars movies that I would create for people to visit, it wouldn't have been the rundown, broken down, rusted place.
There's some very beautiful planets in some of those Star
there's
Wars
a
lands.
Lot of
Even
great.
In Star Tours, it's more interesting to look at. They pick one of these rustic planets, and yeah, it looked authentic and it looked rustic. But when you're in Disneyland, the beauty of the place is part of the illusion. And walking around this rustic place, authentic as it may have been to one of the Star Wars planets, again, that's not why I go to Disneyland. I am a Star Wars fan, by the way. You're not listening to someone who doesn't like Star. I like Star Wars. But it did not have a very powerful effect on me.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that was difficult in the Star Wars land, it does feel like you're transported to this other place, but probably a place none of us would ever pay to go visit because it's old. Looking and broken
down. And very
down.
Difficult to navigate your way around.
That's the other thing I was going to say is that the signage in there is non-existent.
It's written in alien languages. Apparently there's some app you can download to get you through it better.
So. Which we didn't know until much later.
We have our iPhones, but you know, I don't always want to have to bring up an app.
And I use the Disneyland app to navigate Disneyland, but there was nothing referring
even know.
To that.
There was nobody even told us to download.
No,
there was nothing
we heard
that
about
said,
it later.
We heard later, oh, you didn't download the app? Well, no, it didn't occur to us that you needed an app.
So that would be my only other critique of this land is that they don't give you a fair shot at even being immersed in it because they don't give you the language you need to do it. Now, I will give them credit. The restroom sign was written in English, big. It was the only sign we could read in the entire park.
But we still had to ask somebody where it was.
Yeah, it was kind of hidden.
When we got there, yeah, it did say restroom.
Yes.
Okay, more of Disneyland from Bob and Dana's point of view when we return. This is Bob Siegel. I've been on the radio for many years, but let me tell you about a voice I've learned to appreciate far more than any radio announcers, Fred Falduti of Realty Executives All Area. Now, why do I care so much about Fred's voice? Because not long ago, Fred's voice spoke the following words to me.
Bob, I have some good news for you. They accepted your offer.
That's right. Fred Falduti just sold my house. With words like those, who needs radio? Folks, I'm telling you, choosing the right realtor is no small task. Fred took a personal interest in my situation, treating me less like a customer and more like a member of the family. And Fred's been doing this since 1994. Realty Executives All Area has sold thousands of homes locally.
Our footprints are throughout San Diego County, and we are proud of our accomplishments of assisting home sellers and buyers like you. Over the years, we've managed hundreds of real estate transactions and have encountered just about every kind of challenging situation possible.
That's it, folks. That's the voice that will sell your home. Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com. We radio hosts love to talk, but let's face it, when have we ever sold your home? Fred Falduti will.
The sequel to The Dangerous Christmas Ornament is called Inside the Castle in the Glass, and already this entertaining sequel is getting great reviews from customers on Amazon.com. Reviews such as this one. Very clever way of introducing certain life principles in a fictional setting. I thoroughly enjoyed the story. Here's another review. I picked up this book at a book signing with Bob Siegel on a Friday. By Monday morning before work, I finished it. This is over 500 pages of story. I couldn't put it down. I would plan to put it down at the end of the chapter, then something big would take place. I would have to continue to see what happened. A lot of unexpected twists and turns and a lot of things you can't imagine. Things that make you say, "What?" By the way, I am pushing 60 years old and I enjoyed this book and look forward to more of Bob's books. Keep them coming. Inside the Castle in the Glass, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Bob Siegel Show. This is Dana Siegel, and I'm joining Bob for the last couple segments to just do a brief review of Disneyland. We've already mentioned that the Disneyland attendance has been way down. The few times we've gone in the last couple of months, we've been stunned by how low they are. Not complaining, because it's been lovely walking onto every ride, but some of the reasons that we're sharing today for that: ticket prices have been increased much higher than normal. The annual pass holders were blocked for most of summer and much more time than typical. They opened Star Wars Land and they didn't get quite as big of, not as much attendance as I think they were anticipating for that. Our personal thought about the Star Wars Land is that it's interesting, but it's not the typical Disneyland show place that you see in the other lands. They do have the Millennium Falcon ride, which is pretty cool.
It's another flight simulator like Star Tours, so it's not that different.
It isn't. It is a different venue, though, and you have some work to do on it. You don't just get to sit there.
It's supposedly interactive, but you could sit there and do jack nothing. It'll make no difference.
Well, we don't know that. I haven't tested that theory. Bob probably has, but I haven't. I feel very, very faithful to my
cabin. If I don't shoot these missiles, we're going to crash or have a different adventure than what I'm seeing on the screen. I don't think so.
Probably not. But the Millennium Falcon is equal to Space Mountain in attendance. Those are both what Disneyland calls e-ticket rides. For those of you that used to go to Disneyland when you had a ticket book.
We're dating ourselves.
Yes, but that was so much fun. They are the best rides in the park. And so those two are the rival top rides right now with the longest waits. Here's an interesting tidbit.
But again, it's the only ride. 3 years we waited for this land. It's the only ride in the whole Star Wars land.
Yes, and that was a change from what they originally were going to do. The second ride, which was we have heard was supposed to be the original ride opening, is the Rise of the Resistance. And it's coming in January. So stay tuned. We'll come back in January and let you know what we think about that one. But this is interesting. The Millennium Falcon ride called Smuggler's Run has a capacity of 1,800 riders per hour. Isn't that incredible? So they can get almost 30,000 people through that ride in a day from opening to close. Disneyland's estimated park attendance is 50,000. And so one of the other reasons that people feel like Disneyland is less full is because the acreage they added for Star Wars Land increased the park by 20%. So they added 14 acres of land from their back lots to create Star Wars Land, and they can hide 10,000 people in that place.
Unfortunately, they also knocked out Thunder Ranch, which was a very charming part of the park. It wasn't my favorite, but it was a very nice, charming part of the park.
Yeah, so the park is a fifth bigger than it was. Now, here's another really interesting thing that most people would probably not notice, but this is the kind of stuff I love. And I do notice these things. Disneyland spent more than a year on a what was called the Project Stardust. And it was a project that took in the whole park operations, infrastructure, crowd control, all the management, traffic flow, everything. And they did several things to address that. So while the park was closed at nights and they closed down little sections at a time and redesigned them, they widened many pathways. They narrowed planters. They also lowered the curbs in the roundabout down by Sleeping Beauty Castle so that strollers and wheelchairs can go up and down much more easily. They don't have to wait for the ramps or so traffic isn't trying to move to a place to move.
People forget this whole thing. They knocked down an orchard to build Disneyland. So
yes,
it's amazing. They built it in such a way that it seems like a bigger space than it is, but they've been working with a very small space all these years.
A very small space. And so, to Disneyland's credit, as in Disney fashion, they have taken things out, but not so that the average person would notice. And I did know they were doing this. So when I went back, I was looking and I could see where they had taken out curbs. Some of the planters are gone, but it doesn't change the magic or the beauty of Disneyland. They kept that part. They did other things like opening up the walkway into Adventureland. It used to kind of compress down into a skinny walkway with a big, huge Adventureland sign and arch. They've cleared that, so it's a huge opening now with a new Adventureland sign. So just things like that that most people wouldn't notice were done to help increase. They've also banned supersized strollers, and I watched all these times we were there. I still see huge strollers. So I can't imagine what a supersized stroller was that is not allowed into Disneyland anymore. But they're still.
They're probably talking about the monorail. The supersized stroller.
I don't know. But that was another area. So I found that really interesting. They've done a great job with that part. Another reason for just the changes in Disneyland is that they are drawing a lot more people to California Adventure because they have, they've just redesigned the pier.
But that it's was down pier. But that was down in attendance every bit as much too, though.
Unless they had the special festivals going, which draws them back in.
No, I mean, ride-wise, we just walked on at California Adventure,
too. Several of them, yes. Well, we would go early in the morning,
You said it earlier, they froze out a lot of the season holders, and then they didn't get the influx of other people, and then they can't, in the middle of the summer, unfreeze the season holders, because some people bought tickets that got them a higher level where they weren't as blocked, and that wouldn't have been fair to them. So they kind of just made their bed and had to sleep in it.
Right. So Disney, California Adventure is drawing more people now. They have, I think the changes they've made to Pixar Pier have been really good. We've enjoyed those. They also are in the process of redoing. They took down Bugs Land, which made me sad because I thought that was a one really neat place for little kids. But they are going to open up a Marvel superhero land in there. Don't know how long that will be.
Hopefully it won't be as long as Galaxy's Edge was.
We hope not. Oh, and that's the end of our show. But Disneyland is a great place to go. And right now, with ticket prices down because they're trying to draw the crowds back, we highly recommend take the family for a visit to Disneyland or California Adventure.
The Reader's Digest version here, they got greedy. They went to the well once too often. Okay. We'll see you next week.
Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.